Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's hear it for the one and only super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Who's that?
Okay.
And, who's that boy? La-la-la-la, it's Max.
Who's that sound cue? Maybe it's Max. Maybe it's Maybelline. I'm Ben. Noel, you know, I was thinking.
I'm born with it.
You're born.
Record.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I know. That's why we hang out. So I was thinking about this. We had this lovely conversation just a second ago for us off air about how we're always very fortunate and we acknowledge how grateful we are to be able to do these shows with you, Ridiculous Historians. And Noel, I like to think that we haven't let our jobs change us too much. Would you agree with that?
No, I would agree with that. Yeah. I try to actively not become a monster. That's one of my goals. And I think the first step to doing that is self-awareness, a skill which the subject of today's episode, John Paul Getty, seems to have lacked, perhaps. I don't know. We're fortunate for sure, but we're not John Paul Getty fortunate. And that man was made of the kind of money that changes people.
Yeah, we're also not J. Paul Getty petty. We're not that level of petty. Mm-hmm. Now, this guy, you're going to see, we're not sure whether this will be a two-part episode because we sometimes our off-mic conversations get to be a little bit like group therapy. Like, what do we think about the world? How does it inform ourselves? So, happy birthday.
What would we do if we had all the money in the world?
Right.
Don't buy the violin after the first year. Rent it for the first year. Yes, then buy it once you know you really like it. Mm-hmm. True story. We were just talking about that.
We wrapped that into a real big metaphor about the plight of humanity.
Yeah.
You know, so bowling was involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't buy the ball on day one.
Yeah. I have accidentally joined a Vulcan themed bowling league. Shout out to our awesome graphic designer, Pam Peacock, who is our fearless leader in that regard. But let's not bury the lead. John Paul Getty. You have doubtlessly heard the name Getty. You may not have heard it associated with the family because it is a legit American aristocracy. It's a dynasty. Like, there are actors who were part of the Getty dynasty. We'll get into all of that. But what you need to
know. You might
have
seen some of their pictures.
You might have seen their pictures. They control a huge or a significant chunk of copyrighted images. Like, Getty images is something that Noel, you and I, and probably you too, Max, at this point, had to interface with. Often when we're starting shows, when we're looking for images to share, back when I was writing a ton of old How Stuff Works videos, we had to go back and forth about which Getty images we could afford. I think you can even find
a group shot of some of us on Getty Images. We made it to Getty Images.
Hey.
We were jerks about it for like 48 hours.
All you
gotta
do is walk
hours.
A red carpet.
Yeah.
Every red carpet in the world is on Getty Images, no matter the quality or size.
Exactly. So this Getty dynasty, the reason Getty is such a recognizable word in the Western world today is because by the late 1960s, this guy, John Paul Getty, had become known as the richest man in the world. Now, that's a tricky title because as anybody who listens to Stuff They Don't Want You to Know can tell you, the real most powerful people in the world are not rated as much by bank accounts. Nobody knows how much money Putin actually has, for instance, even when Russia is turning into a dumpster fire. This guy, though, Getty got called the richest man in the world by Fortune magazine in 1957, and he was an oil man, right, Noel?
He was. He was a man of oil. A great animal collected song by the same name. Yeah, you know, he got in on the ground floor. I mean, I think maybe in some ways the character of Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood mm-hmm. might have been influenced or inspired by Getty. I'm just kind of just spitballing on that. I don't know that for sure. But, you know, in the same way that Paul Thomas Anderson sort of vaguely based the character played by Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master on L. Ron Hubbard, mm-hmm. it's definitely a vibe because, you know, oil is one of those things where to truly become a titan of the industry, you got to kind of get in on the ground floor.
100%. You got to get in on...
You got to drink everyone else's milkshake.
Yeah, you got to get below the ground floor, you know, start drilling. Well, also, J. Paul Getty was the inspiration for an excellent little Saturday Night Live sketch with Adam Driver as an oil man talking to his... talking at his son's career day at school. Do check it out. Do you guys remember that one?
I don't think I've seen this one.
I'm going to send it to you after this. All right, we'll do our homework first. So he had been called the richest man in the world for a while because by the time he had consolidated his various businesses into what was called the Getty Oil Company, his personal fortune, not related to his job, his personal fortune was estimated to be at more than $2 billion by like 1967. But as you know, more money, more problems. Hip hop is right. His family had a lot of personal tribulations and travails such that people started asking whether the Gettys were cursed. And to learn about whether or not this is a curse, first off, wait, we've talked about this before on various shows on and off air. Noel, Max, do you guys believe in curses?
Oh, gosh, belief is a hell of a drug. I don't know about that. I mean, I feel like I believe in something resembling karma.
Sure.
I feel like if you're a person of great means and you put negative things out into the world and you screw people over, then potentially negative things will come back to you, but I don't know. That's probably about as hippie as I get in my belief system.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of other circumstances that can cause stuff that looks like a curse to happen. Mm-hmm. And I do think karma is like, you know, not like the direct, like actual notion of karma, but like something similar to that is a part of that. But just, I think calling someone a curse is like very good, like get a jail free card of just being like, oh, all these terrible things have happened, instead of just like, you know, being like, all these terrible things happen and I have a hand
right
to play in these things.
Right. So saying a curse, that saying something is a curse is refusing to acknowledge oneself as the only constant in the equation of catastrophe. I get it. I mean, my favorite definition of magic is weaponized psychology. That's a shout out to our buddy, Dr. Damian Patrick Williams. Look up his work. So anyway, let's learn about Getty before we learn about whether or not there's a curse.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. This story has it all. There's kidnapping. There's high-level secession vibes, if you're familiar with that show. And there's a lot of tragedy. So, no fooling, by any measure, this guy's one of the most successful tycoons of industry in all of U.S. history. He did make multiple billions of dollars in the oil business, but he didn't, you know, he didn't start from the bottom. You know, he didn't come out the mud, as people often say. The Gettys, his forebears started as Scotch-Irish Presbyterian immigrants. One town in Pennsylvania is even named after the family. That's Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. You might recognize that from some other stories, or if you are a fan of history. His father, George F. Getty, got into corporate law and insurance in Minneapolis. And then he moved the family to Oklahoma in 1904 to get in, like you said, Noel, on the ground floor of the oil business. He started making some pretty good scratch in just a few years with the Minnehoma Oil Company. And around that time, he was already, like, before J. Paul ever gets on the scene, his father has already made it. He's already a millionaire several times over.
Correct. Speaking of correct things, I just want to point out that I can't find any evidence that P.T. Anderson specifically drew influence from Getty for his character in There'll Be Blood. It's based on the book Oil by Upton Sinclair. But it's just such a rarefied position that there are certainly similarities, you know, in terms of the kind of riches that sort of discovery and that sort of, you know, career path and how, like, you know, there can only be a few, right? Like actual bona fide oil magnates. So I think I was barking up the right tree in theory, but I just can't find any direct quotes from Anderson citing Getty as an inspiration.
Oil by Upton Sinclair, though, I read that book. It is based on the life of another tycoon named Edward L. Doheny or something like that.
That's right. It's Doheny or something.
Doheny, yeah.
Weird, with a weird H placement.
Yeah, but still, like you said, rarefied air. And this rarefied air of financial success is what J. Paul is born into. He gets out of college in pretty young. He's 21 years old. He graduates college. And over the summer, he is working in the family business. He's working at the oil fields. And his dad wasn't really giving him money. His dad was lending him money and said, here, go make your own way, John Paul. Invest in oil wells all thine own. I don't know why he's doing these and thous. That's more of a Quaker thing.
I dig it. I think it suits him. But yeah, it's true. He takes that whatever seed money and he does invest it smartly and pretty quickly makes his first $1 million, which in those days was significant scratch. And he's quoted as saying, in building a large fortune, it pays to be born at the right time. I was born at a very favorable time. If I had been born earlier or later, I would have missed the great business opportunities that existed in World War I and later. I suppose it takes a long time and it takes extraordinary circumstances to be born at the right time and to have cash money available at the right time. I was fortunate to due to my father's foresight and my good luck, Mr. Wayne. Sorry, kind of a Bane voice there. I don't know where that came from, but I'm rolling with it. Yeah, timing is everything. Getting in on the ground floor of an industry is everything, and only a few people can do it.
Yeah, I want to jump in here because we said at the top that this guy kind of lacks some self-awareness, which is 100% true. But yeah, this is one of the lines where I'm like, he at least somewhat seems aware that it's not like, I did all of this. I am so great. I am just amazing. He at least realizes it's like, well, I had some money that I got from my dad and I got into this business at the exact right time.
Well, yeah. He's also, you can tell that his father, the patriarch of the Gettys, was one of the few people that he actually looked up to and respected. So Right. Maybe that's a function of it.
And I think it probably really embedded in him this idea of, you know, no handouts, you know, like, I mean, yeah, you'll get your inheritance when I'm dead. Until then, you're not getting a red cent unless it's something that I'm going to, you know, use to invest in you and you show me that you've got the chops. Otherwise, you know, he wouldn't suffer any shiftless layabouts. Let's just say he wouldn't suffer anyone that was just trying to coast on the family fortune, because clearly his father instilled that in him.
Well, sort of. There was definitely a process, because the year after he makes his first million, he does become one of those shiftless layabouts. Just like a hero's journey, Joseph Campbell thing, he spends some time in the wilderness of vice. He spends 2 years in Los Angeles as what would have been called a playboy. He's just blowing money in the clubs, making it rain, chasing chicks. And this is from he gets back in the oil business in 1919. So 1917, 18, those are his lost years. Once he gets back in the oil business, he also has a tumultuous love life. He's married and divorced 3 times in the 20s. And his father, George F., who is still very much in the mix, is like, hey, I think you're good at business, but son, you got to button up your love life, buddy. You know, the imagined conversation is, well, what if you get into the realm of politics? Morality or the appearance of such is important. That's a great quote that I just made up, but to be clear, that's not an actual quote. That's just the conversation I think they had.
Yes.
And so he said, like, as George was dying, he starts warning his son and telling his associates, because I wouldn't call them friends at that level of wealth. He says, look, my son's going to destroy the family business. He can't have the whole pie. So George F. Getty dies with a fortune in excess of $10 million. He leaves his son, J. Paul, about $500,000, and he leaves the business to his wife.
See, you got to wonder, though. I mean, everything you just said, you know, is absolutely accurate. But, like, you got to wonder, did he do this as almost like a test?
like, so he had to pull himself up by his bootstraps, kind of like when he just gave him that the loan early on, and then he invested it right. And now he's sort of like in this wandering in this wilderness of vice, as you say. And he's almost like, you know what? The worst thing I could do for my son, it will just keep him in this like limbo, is leave him all of this money, you know, unchecked, and leave him this company, which at this point in his life, he may well drive into the ground. So I think honestly, whether he did this consciously or not, this is probably the best thing that could have happened to Jean-Paul Getty, getting that, you know, I mean, by most mortal standards, $500,000 isn't a pittance, but compared to the big old pie that was on the table, it really was. But it really did force Getty to flex some of the knowledge that he had that George maybe didn't even know he had, because he really had been doing his homework and studying, and he was very familiar with things like petroleum geology. If you know anything about the art world, you know that Getty is huge in that realm in terms of grants, in terms of museums, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. That all started with this guy, Jean-Paul Getty. He was very familiar with the art world, and he was a very worldly man. He could speak French and German and Italian. He also could conversationally get along in Spanish, Arabic, Russian, and Greek, as well as being able to read Greek and Latin. So he was an incredibly intelligent person and a very skilled businessman, despite his kind of, you know, dalliances in his 20s.
Well, this is, okay, so this is a question. Yeah, the word I just said, polyglot, is just the fancy word for speaking multiple languages well. And I know some polyglots. They're usually really cool. But this is one of my questions. So if you were a child of privilege, if you were a scion to a dynasty like this, is it not true that you have more opportunities to cultivate those pursuits?
Oh, yeah.
This guy wasn't, you know, scratching wheat out of the dirt.
No question.
So I would say if you hear these kind of accolades, folks, and you're an average person, just remember that this is a guy who started on third base. So he had time to stroll to the home run of those various achievements.
No doubt.
I mean, how'd that baseball analogy work, Max? Is that?
Sure.
Give the man a break. Come on.
It worked fine.
It was visual. I liked the image of strolling.
Imagery, it works great. In actual baseball, it makes no sense.
No, I figured that was, I just wanted a gut check. All right.
Fair. So yeah, it sort of reminds me of like how, you know, oftentimes a lot of folks who become very successful actors, not always, but sometimes, or successful musicians or whatever, they've got a bit of a safety net.
Pretty often.
And they're able to go to the finest of drama schools, you know, because they were able to receive, you know, the best education, again, financial safety net that allowed them to kind of just, you know, go out there and try to be an artist or an actor, because they didn't have to worry about making ends meet.
Also, I want to backtrack. You know what, Ben? I'm thinking about it more. It made a lot of sense, baseball sense-wise. So I'm thinking someone else hit the home run.
Right, like, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, okay, I'm going to apologize. Good analogy, buddy.
Oh, thanks, man. You don't have to apologize. I'm not Getty. I'm not just weirdly mad at people. But
Until I get your inheritance and it's like $1, and it's like for making fun of that baseball analogy.
He will ruin this company, this fictitious company. So here's another film comparison. If you want to, before we get to Getty's more villainous behavior or morally objectionable behavior, it's like he's like Robert De Niro's character in that film Casino. He is an obsessive researcher. I love that you pointed out his knowledge of petroleum geology. So like the scene in Casino where you see Robert De Niro testing the basketball and looking at the floor and bouncing stuff before he makes any bets or anything like that. This is what Getty is doing, what J. Paul is doing when he starts making international oil deals. He's researching the land, the wells, the geology. He learns Arabic, or he gets conversational in Arabic, not fluent, so that he can directly negotiate with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to get a 60-year concession or lease on an oil field. He pays $9.5 million for it in 1949. No oil has been discovered there yet, right? People are thinking there might be some, but they're not doing the casino level research that he did. So he pays $9.5 million, ton of money back then, ton of money now. And then he pays $30 million more to explore the oil field before he hits the oil in 1953, like just like the Beverly Hillbillies, up from the ground comes a bubbling crude. Production reaches 16 million barrels a year. That's more than $1 billion at today's prices per year.
Buddy. Yeah. Again, like the privilege of being able to explore those oil fields and having the infrastructure in place and the knowledge, you know, like very much born on whichever base is appropriate. Born at shortstop. Is that a thing? That's not really a base. It's more of a, that's a person. Anyway, I'm sorry. I had to try my hand at the baseball metaphor as
You're doing it. We
thanks,
a rising tide carries all vessels.
Max, I don't want to hear another word from you.
A home run when the bases are loaded. You know what I mean? That clears the field.
That's right. Clearly, I'm not a golfer. He did good. He did real good. And essentially, you know, did better than his father.
He did. And part of that's because the business of oil is evolving as well. You know what I mean? He steered the business toward global domination. But again, remember, the business was left to his mom, not directly to him, but he's still like doing a lot of the day-to-day stuff. And George's prediction about his son was, you know, I know you have your head on your shoulders with business, but your personal life is going to be a problem. And that seemed to have some sand to it for a while. He would go on to have five wives. He had five sons with four of his five wives. And in each case, it wasn't the best marriage. There was tragedy. People weren't communicating well. That's the key to a good relationship. There was also just rank indifference. He was icing some of them. His eldest son, George Franklin Getty II, was supposed to be the heir, but just like that show Succession, they didn't get on too well. Like, he barely spoke with his son who was supposed to be his heir. I didn't know this until we started researching this with our research associate, Dr. Zach.
Zach.
But J. Paul didn't go to his own son's wedding. He was like, I got oil barrels to count or something.
Yeah, gold coins to swim in.
Yeah.
Giant vault. I always love that image with George Scrooge McDuck, where he spits out the coins.
Dangerous. Try that in real life. You will break bones.
You will break bones, or at the very least get a really bad concussion. So he's skipping out on his son's wedding. He doesn't really have any time for his grandchildren. And that's the son that, like, he kind of liked, I guess. Not liked, but like he had a high position in the company.
Maybe number two.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little confusing as to, you know, because being liked by Jean-Paul Getty basically just meant he wouldn't completely ice you out and skip your wedding. It wasn't like he was, you know, throwing you parties and giving you hugs or anything. I don't think he gave good hugs, I would imagine. But his son, his other son, Jean-Paul Getty Jr., had four sons with his wife, Gail Harris. Jean-Paul Getty III was one of these sons, and really the subject of kind of the main plot twist in today's story.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
So we'll call him, let's just call him JP3. JP3 is the son of John Paul Jr., who divorces his wife, JP3's mother, Gail Harris, in 1964. And then JP Jr., JP3's dad, moves to Rome, and he remarries to a woman named Talitha Pohl, but allegedly, or according to historians of the family and reports, he became addicted to heroin, and that's very sad. It just seems like he was sort of a little bit adrift, you know, and didn't really have any direction or like a set of skills, and just kind of withered a little bit. So JP3, who is his son, also ends up moving to Italy as a teenager. At first, he's at a boarding school, like you do, but he's a bit of a troublemaker, a bit of a problem child. He gets kicked out. He's expelled. And even though his father had left Rome and moved to England following his new wife's overdose on heroin, he had to skip town, I guess, JP3 continued living in Italy on his lonesome.
Yes. Yeah. And
became a bit of a bohemian.
Yeah. He was a kid without consequences. You've probably met some in your own life, Ridiculous Historians. You may have grown up as one. He got expelled from a lot of schools. He was partying. He was considered artistic, but he was a wild kid. He's like one of those kids for whom it doesn't matter. If you stay in the fancy boarding school, your parents can just put you in another one, or your family. He threw a Molotov cocktail during a protest. He was just always partying. And because of this, because of his behavior and the notoriety of his family, he was like a low-key local celebrity while he was living in Rome at the age of 16. And he had long, curly hair. The press gave him a nickname that wasn't J3. They called him the Golden Hippie. And this is where things get a little bit strange. So one day, he's been out partying all night. He's walking home, maybe singing a song from a local music hall. It's the wee hours of July 10th, 1973. A car skirts up beside him, and the driver says, "Excuse me, signore, are you Paul Getty?" And Paul, we don't know how drunk he was, but Paul goes, "Yeah, man." And then they grab him. They blackbag him, basically. They pull him into a car. They muzzle him with a pad soaked in chloroform and a gag, and they drive him away. He gets snatched. One note about chloroform: a lot of times movies are lying to you. if you want, there's a reason they use the gag. It's not just to keep him quiet. It's to keep the chloroform on his face. Because if you chloroform someone and you remove it, they will come to shortly thereafter. This is not a step-by-step guide on how to incapacitate people. It's just good to know these things in case situations occur.
Ben, you got a chloroform guy?
What? Yeah. I mean, you know, Gandhi would have said you got to be the chloroform guy you wish to see in the world. But all don't right, do
that's
it.
Fair. No, don't do it. I actually didn't know that, Ben. I would have bungled my kidnapping attempt horribly.
They would have woken up partway through.
Then just run away. And then I would have had to give chase. And I don't know. I'm not in that kind of shape. I would have lost the mark. But they did not lose the mark, these kidnappers. They spirited Getty away to a hideaway, a hideout in the Italian countryside. And obviously, you see where this is going. It would appear JP3's loose lips sank his own ship. It's not like they would want to make it public information that this is an heir to the Getty fortune, especially in a place like Italy where, you know, there are criminal elements around. You know, not to say that's exclusively an Italian thing, but organized crime did kind of have its roots in this part of the world. And it is conjectured that when JP3 would like barter some of his paintings for rent, because again, wasn't swimming in dough, there were some folks maybe at the restaurant near his apartment where he would go to do this that overheard and maybe, you know, curried a little favor with the local, you know, mafioso and potentially maybe got a little bit of a payday, like a finder's fee.
Yeah. Yeah. And to this day, the details of the genesis of this kidnapping plot are still a little murky. But we do know that a few days after the disappearance, the Golden Hippie's mother gets a note and says the following: "Dear mother, I have fallen into the hands of kidnappers. Don't let me be killed. Please make sure the police do not interfere. You must absolutely not take this as a joke. Don't give publicity to my kidnapping." It's spelled like kidnapping. But look, people took this as a joke initially because the scuttlebutt had it that the Golden Hippie had talked to friends, family, and locals and trusted folks in his life about solving his financial problems by arranging his own perfect kidnapping and using that as a pretext to get a large sum of scratch from his grandfather to pay the ransom ostensibly, and then just keeping it for himself and saying, "Thank you, grandfather. I've learned my lesson and shall change my ways."
There go those loose lips again, JP3.
Mm-hmm.
Not good. Sinking your own ship. The boy who cried wolf and all that, right?
Yeah.
Nobody comes a running.
Boy who cried kidnapping.
Mm-hmm. This even translates to the local police, mm-hmm. who are also aware of this. And they're like, he probably kidnapped himself. Yeah, we don't have the resources to deal with this shiftless layabout. I'm going to keep saying that.
Yeah, well, also the police, at least some faction of them, were likely part of Indragheta, like part of the mafia group at the time. Oh, yeah. Like they were probably compromised.
On the payroll, yeah, yeah, for sure.
And everybody knew he was in debt because he kept partying, even though he's talking about how he's out of money, you know, bumming drinks and whatnot. His kidnappers were this mafia group from southern Italy. They knew all about his family. His mom, Gail, gets a call from the mafioso ringleader, Cinquanta. And Cinquanta says, "Look, we know who your family is. It's going to take a lot of money to get your son back." And she told them the truth. She said, "Look, I know we got the name, but I don't have any of the family money. We're cut off." And then he said, "Ask for it from your father-in-law. He has all the money in the world."
All the money in the world. There's a film, biopic, I guess, by Ridley Scott called All the Money in the World, mm-hmm. which I have not seen, but I very much want to. In fact, I think after we wrap up here, I might rent it on the old Roku and give it a look. I do like Ridley Scott. This doesn't appear to be considered like one of his like greats, because I certainly haven't heard a whole lot about it, but I am fascinated to see how this was dramatized. All the Money in the World. And so they do just that. they go to old dear sweet curmudgeonly grandpapa and lay it out for him. You know, thinking he would just, oh, my poor sweet grandson.
Yeah.
That is not what happened.
No, no. They're swimming with the shark and they think they're in the guppy pool. This is going to be part one. We thought this would be the perfect place to pause the story here. We're going to return at the top of next week with part two of this story. We're going to zoom out because you need to learn a little bit more about old J.P. Getty, the patriarch, to learn why things went down the way they did. But we can't wait for you to hear it. Thank you for joining us, folks. As always, thanks to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Max, you're not secretly a Getty, are you? Because you've been
Max,
making some,
all the money in the world.
You got some weird timing with your chuckles today.
I mean, Maxwell James Williams Getty, yeah. I mean, there's no hyphen at the end of my last name.
You son of a
the
gun.
The third Esquire Junior Senior.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing we've learned from this episode, though, is don't name your children junior and third. And because if down the road someone does a podcast about you, it just gets messy.
Right. Like Gabriel Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude, which is a great book.
Or like that House of Dragons business.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, that's also just a matter of casting. You know, a lot of those people look very similar. I'm thinking.
Yeah, but also even the ones with different names, their names sound similar.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Rhaenyra's, you've got Rhaenys, you got, you know. Anyway.
We could just Mad Lib it. I can make one up now.
Really
and it'll
good.
Sound
it'd be totally
like,
believable. Yeah.
You know, you'll be like Valerio. And they'll say, oh, I think I remember him. Yeah. Valerio, right?
Valley High.
Yeah. So with that name confusion aside, we are sticking to some nicknames for these folks. But this is an important story, and we can't wait to explore it with you. Thanks also to our own Balthazar, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister. Let's see who else. Thanks to, Yves Jeffcoat, Alex Williams, who composed this slamming track.
Alex Williams, indeed. Christopher Asiotis, here in spirit. The ghost of John Paul Getty, Junior, Senior, Maxwell, Esquire, Tally-ho.
Oh, the
Tally-ho to you.
Yeah, tally-ho to you. The kidnappers are calling me, Noel. I gotta go.
Okay, all good. We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.